Eat, Drink, Indie Radio is powered by eatdrinkindie.com. Eat local, drink local, eat, drink, indie. Welcome to Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI HD2, The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. We're talking markets today here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio, but these aren't your traditional farmer's markets. First, we'll be talking with Indianapolis City Market Executive Director Stevie Stays-Kirsch about the innovative projects that are underway outside the city market. She'll tell us about the 20th anniversary season of the original farmer's market at the city market, and we'll hear about the market's efforts at placemaking and just what that means. We'll also talk with Nick Carter, co-founder and CEO of MarketWagon.com, an online farmer's market. And we'll talk with Twinkle Van Winkle, market master with Hoosier Harvest Market, an online farmer's market with a co-op model. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Markets today here on Eat Drink Indie Radio, and that includes our Indianapolis City Market. The market's executive director, Stevie Stays-Kirsch, talks with us today about what the city market can be, how it can reach out and be more connected to Indianapolis, how it can serve the public better, and how a concept called placemaking fits into its mission. Stevie, tell me a little bit about what the market is doing right now.
Oh, goodness. We are really embracing, we're in transition, I would say. It's a transitional time for the market. The market has long been known as a food destination and, of course, a craft beer destination, which is great, and a retail destination. But we really are embarking in a new territory of being an all-inclusive, welcoming community center, if you will, that embraces multiculturalism, inclusiveness, and makes everybody from every walk of life feel comfortable that they have pride and ownership of this space, and that this is a place that they can come to and interact and be social with people who are very different from them. Think of it almost as an application in social services. You know, we have so many opportunities to reach out to communities that we haven't been real strong partnering with in the past, whether it's the refugee communities or the homeless communities, Horizon House and downtown homeless prevention, those kinds of organizations and audiences that we need to do a better job of embracing and making feel comfortable that this is their public market too.
How does that work with the farmers market that people are so familiar with on Wednesdays downtown on Market Street?
So, yes, and I'm glad you mentioned it's our 20th anniversary season. We started in 1997. Gosh, Jolene, you and I were, communicating back then, too. I was probably doing something very similar to right now. But it's super exciting, and every Wednesday we have a local dignitary come and ring the market bell as kind of a ceremonial thing. But we host WIC, which is Women, Infants, and Children, and Senior Farmers Market Nutrition Program, who they both are federally funded programs to give out vouchers to those who are in need to make sure that they get high nutrient, rich foods. So they use vouchers at the farmers market, and we need to do a better job of reaching out to those. They're here. They're already here picking up vouchers and shopping for nutrient-rich foods. So we need to engage with them better and say, how can City Market enhance your life? What can we do? What aren't you getting elsewhere? How can we fill a need in your life that makes your life better? Is it a knitting class? Is it exercise class? Is it, we've got the YMCA right here that we can work with in a very social services type of application. And engage those people. They're here anyway. We know that they can get here. So maybe if we can get them here more often and meet their needs, their basic needs, their lives will be enhanced. And that's what public markets should do. That should be our function.
So talk a little bit about the role of a public market in a city. I know you've done a lot of research on this. You've traveled to other conferences, other markets all around the country. Tell me your view on public markets.
So when I travel, and I know we've talked about this too, when I travel, one of the very first places I visit is the public market, because that's where you get a real sense of how the locals live, how they shop, how they play, how they eat, how they drink. And public markets should fill not only all of those needs, but again, it should be a very welcoming place for people to go and play a game of cards and use it as a resource for social interaction, use it as a resource for social enterprise. You know, we are here to help launch ideas and businesses and form smart partnerships, again, in the social services aspect, but in many others as well, to bring cultural events and cultural things to the market, to build awareness and understanding, to make sure that different populations see it as a place that they can go feel welcome and use as a resource. So public markets, gosh, they are the heart of a city. They are the heart of a city.
Now, you've done a lot with at conferences. You've presented at conferences, and you've brought things back to Indianapolis from other places. Talk a little bit about some of those ideas that you've brought back that are starting, you know, we're starting to see some fruition of some of these ideas that you've had in the past.
One of the more interesting ideas that I brought back from a conference in Vancouver last year, it was Placemaking Week. And, you know, public markets should have a minimum of 10 different things that they offer to communities. So, yes, you can grab a bite to eat. Food is always kind of at the fore, but that's certainly not the only thing. You can also interact with your neighbor. You can talk to somebody new. You can play a game of bocce. You can relax under a tree in a picnic table and hang with your family. You know, there are so many things that can be done at a public market. But again, reaching out to those communities, Pittsburgh has something so interesting called the Conflict Kitchen. And it's a kitchen that is used as an educational platform where they highlight foods and culture and music from countries that the United States is in conflict with. So such an interesting concept of just awareness, education, maybe some understanding. And I don't know that the mission is toward peace per se, but it's just understanding. And that's a great innovative kind of idea. Different market co-ops within public markets, innovations with public markets. There have been some great ideas. And in fact, I'm heading to a conference this October, another Placemaking Week conference in Amsterdam. So I'm super excited because that's a highly innovative area. So I'm expecting to bring back technological advances for public markets and innovative ideas for it'll be very exciting.
Well, now you mentioned placemaking. Tell me about what you've been doing here at the market with placemaking.
Thanks to a grant that City Market received from Southwest Airlines in partnership with Big Car Collaborative and Project for Public Spaces in New York, we have been able to take areas of the market, including East Plaza, which has long been a concrete jungle, rather desolate, where nobody wanted to be because it was so inhospitable for people. And we've transformed it, and we're still in the process of transforming it, into a space that is pretty robust with activity. We had Placemaking Day, second annual Placemaking Day yesterday. Dignitaries from Southwest were in town, Project for Public Spaces, of course, Big Car, the mayor, council people. And it was great because you saw a snapshot of what the market can be from a cultural center perspective. We have a new rain garden where what we fondly referred to as the pit was. So the pit on East Plaza was originally a fountain that was built in 1977, worked for maybe a month, and never worked since.
Now this is on sort of on the corner of Alabama and Market. So people could, you know, that it's that corner of the block, right?
That's correct. If you're old enough, as I am, to remember Market Square Arena, it's that side of the building on Alabama. So the pit, They removed the fountain mechanism many, many years ago. But then it was just a sunken space that was kind of a trash collector and a liability and a sometime duck pond. And we've been able to transform that, thanks to Williams Creek engineering firm, into this really beautiful meditative rain garden that is useful for people, and you can go and relax. We'll have performances in there. You can sit within it. We have umbrellas. In addition to that, we've built bocce courts for fun, ping pong tables, cornhole sets, music, all kinds of things for people to interact socially with people that they've never met before. You know, pretty soon we're going to have a 28-story tower filled with residents who want to feel connected to their community. And this is a great way for that to happen, for them to come over to the market, use it as their backyard, per se, and enjoy socialization, human interaction. We're missing that these days. We're missing it. You know, so just being able to connect with people builds resilient communities. And the more people feel connected, the longer they stay.
We've been talking with Stevie Stays-Kirsch, Executive Director of the Indianapolis City Market. We'll be right back with more from Stevie on placemaking at the City Market here on Eat Drink Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Katzenberger, and we are back here on Eat Drink Indie Radio talking today about the Indianapolis City Market and its efforts to connect with the public outside of the market through a concept called placemaking. If you've driven by or walked up to the market recently, you've probably noticed some changes, especially on the East Plaza. Adirondack chairs and beach umbrellas in a sunken rain garden, more tables and chairs, even bocce ball courts. Executive Director Stevie Stays-Kirsch tells us about the market's efforts at placemaking.
Placemaking, you can think of it in terms of a place that accommodates and welcomes human interaction, sociability, but also is robust in its offerings to those audiences. So there are several things to do with it. You could spend an entire day. There are several things to do within that place, whether you just want to hang out and relax, kind of check out for a while, maybe charge a cell phone, maybe grab a bite to eat, maybe talk to your neighbor. It provides a comfortable space for you to be able to do a lot of different things. And it's interesting because we've been so focused on the inside of the market, and I'm happy to report that we're 100% leased right now.
Oh, now that's awesome, too. So the inside food hall area, good to know that is all full.
Yes, it is full. We are now turning our sights to the mezzanine, because that's kind of our next opportunity area within City Market. But the big challenge that the market has long had is that with all the hustle and bustle and vibrancy that happens inside of it, you could walk by it a million times a day and not get that sense, because it's a beautiful brick fortress that doesn't have good vision points to the inside of the market. So you don't really get that sense. So you could walk by it and not really know what happens inside and not be compelled to come inside. So what we have to do is take that vibrancy, take that activity outside to the exterior parts of the market through placemaking and through events and programming, and both passive and active programming, meaning we'll host events that we do. In fact, we're hosting on July 28th, final Friday date night out on East Plaza, and there'll be tables and chairs. We'll have a DJ playing very Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra kind of music. There'll be from 7:15 to 8:15, a couple's yoga class that includes beer from Tomlinson Tap Room. The YMCA will stay open a little longer in case you want to change out of those yoga clothes into your date night clothes for dancing, bocce, ping pong, all those things. So it'll be a very fun event, and it'll be kind of the start of our outdoor activations at nighttime.
Well, now tell me a little bit about that, because that sounds like it's going to fit right in with more people in the apartment buildings that are coming all around the area.
Absolutely. You know, we have a big opportunity before they start developing habits and going somewhere else. Being connected to your local community, feeling a part of that community, again, provides an opportunity for you to stay longer, because you're connected not only to the places and the spaces, but to the people as well. And so we want to be that place where people think about coming for fun, whether it's just to pick up game of bocce or a programmed event. We are getting ready to activate our alley space behind City Market. We received a grant to do lighting, strong lighting, almost think of like a European thoroughfare. We used the grant money to buy bistro tables and chairs that we'll be putting out there. So we'll be hosting salsa nights and different kind of multimedia, you know, art events in the alley. So look for that to come online in the next month, month and a half.
Oh, no, that's very exciting. So you are really activating, as you said, all the areas outside the market. You know, you've done stuff on the plaza in the past. You had the big 4th of July event out there. You have music regularly. Of course, the City Market, the original farmers market out there on Market Street. But the other outside aspects as well. So this is very exciting.
We're starting to really look at it as an entire campus of opportunity. You get people entering. There are so many different ways to actually enter City Market that we don't want to miss anybody. And each space kind of provides a different tone and a different feel to it, right? So you've got the West Plaza at the corner of Delaware and Market Street. That's more corporate because it faces downtown and gets a lot of employees. Our East Plaza at the corner of Alabama and Market will be more residential focused because that's where the residence is, the 28-story Market Tower, other condos downtown. That'll be more of your family-friendly, again, gaming, programming, activity, backyard kind of, or front yard, if you want to think of it that way. And then the alley space behind us is even more intimate, and it could be a great opportunity for conventions coming in town who host opening night or closing night receptions, who don't just want your average banquet hall, but they want something more unique, you know, in good weather. And they say, gosh, there's this great alley behind City Market with strong lights and bistro chairs and live music. That's it. So it's a more interesting, intimate space to be able to host a plethora of activities.
Now, how do you come up with these ideas? Are you just thinking of these things all the time? And well, like you said, you know, you travel to other other markets and that sort of thing. Do you, you know, how do you pull them all together?
I'll be honest, we steal some ideas occasionally. We are part of a public market network, and we're always chattering with each other about what each other's doing and something new in terms of programming that's fun and has proven record. And also, we get a lot of technical support from Project for Public Spaces, and they often have great ideas. And some of them, like date night, you know, Final Friday date night and the Jimmy O'Donnell Memorial Service ceremony, we just dream up on our own because there are people in the community who have expressed a need or a want. Say, we'd come to the market more if you guys did this. We can do that. We're trying to build a culture of yes. We're not going to say no to an idea or thought that aligns with the market's principles and missions and makes sense and is fun. We're going to say yes to all of it, unless it just doesn't make any sense at all. But we're going to say yes most of the time because it's something that people have expressed that they want or need. Heck yeah, we're here to do that for you.
Well, now, you mentioned earlier that the inside of the City Market is all full. Tell me a little bit about that. So catch us up on what's going on indoors as well.
So our big opportunity, as I mentioned, is nighttime activity. And we have more City Market merchants now staying open past 6 p.m. than we've ever had. And I expect that to grow. And I expect our inside programming to grow with it, to capture the needs of those people who are living and working in the area, especially to our east now. We are endeavoring to fix the mix. So for the longest time, City Market has been known as a food court, and I cringe when I say that, but, you know, let's be honest, it has been a darn good one. But even then, I think we have an opportunity to be more of a shopping destination as well. So one of our brand new tenants, in fact, the most recent one, is a shop called the Flower Boys. And they are taking over about a 300 square foot space in City Market main floor with floor. It's that European style floral shop where it's in buckets and you can create your own or you can have them make it for you. And they have a lot of great corporate accounts. And it's going to be when you come in the doors off of East Plaza, it'll be a very colorful and eye-catching stand. And it's non-food. It's retail, which helps us kind of, again, quote-unquote, fix the mix. Duos, is coming in. They just signed their lease, so we're very happy to announce that.
Now, that is exciting. So tell me a little bit about duos in the city market.
Well, I've been courting them, Becky and David, for many years. And I think the timing is just, it's right. And we've been meeting over the past several weeks to go over logistics and negotiating and talking about space layout and design, and they're very excited. They primarily will be a breakfast and lunchtime operation, which is their forte. And they offer, of course, a superior product too, and they're just lovely people. And I suspect that they will be up and running August.
Well, now that is very exciting. Now the City Market also has gotten some kudos recently for its vegetarian options for lunch, and this is going to play right into that. Tell me a little bit about that.
We've been so blessed with hosting travel writers and food bloggers and food writers, and we give them a great tour of the market. We talk about the different offerings. One of the most recent blogs, a Southern vegan, Ashley Hubbard, of course from the South, and she travels the world and writes about different vegan food options. She did a little bit of a snippet on City Market along with other Indianapolis destinations for vegan foods, and then she wrote an entire blog just on City Market. And she mentioned some great places that have already gotten some terrific notoriety and some others that haven't, but Three Carrots, You Relish, Spice Box, The Tamale Place, several others in the market that have that great vegan option that people don't always associate City Market with vegan foods, but there are a lot of great vegan foods in the market, and some that she didn't mention in an article and that I haven't mentioned today, but it's a terrific destination for vegan vegetarian foodies.
And I think that goes against perhaps what people think of the market as. You know, I think they might think of it as just an easy place to grab something fast, and it is, but there's a lot more than just quick food.
A lot more than just quick food. And I think what also plays into that that mindset about public markets is that, you know, public markets started out as your protein destination. You know, have meat butchers and cheese and eggs and that kind of thing. And public markets across the country, of course, still do that. We've transitioned a little bit in being more of that prepared food destination. But I think people are starting to see that the City Market offers a lot more shopping destination than just, hey, I'm going to grab a quick bite. Linger. Stay a while. It has a lot to offer you that you can, again, spend an entire day here. I could map out an itinerary for you from early morning. Let's say you work out at the Y at 5 a.m. And I can from that point on, get you to 9 o'clock in the evening. And you will not leave City Market.
We've been talking about the Indianapolis City Market with Executive Director Stevie Stays-Kirsch. For more information on the market and its upcoming events, check out IndyCM.com. The interest in local food, it seems, has never been higher. We have more farmers markets and greater access to local food. And today that includes online access as well. With the rise in online shopping, it's no surprise that you can shop for local farmers market items online too. Entrepreneur Nick Carter tells us about MarketWagon.com and how it grew out of his background in farming, technology, and local food. We can talk a little bit about the sort of food businesses that you have been, because I would call you a food entrepreneur right now, although you have also been a tech entrepreneur.
That's where I started.
So tell me a little bit about your sort of food entrepreneur
stuff. The winding road to food entrepreneurship.
Right. This starts, I think, with rabbits.
Well, it starts way back with a herd of Jersey cattle. I was a farm kid.
So you grew up on a farm.
I did. I was raised on a family farm, and when I was in 9 or 10, I started in 4-H and junior 4-H, and I built my own little dairy herd, which I ended up selling to go to college. But you know,
well, that's kind of nice.
Yeah, it worked pretty well. The way I did it was I hated milking, so I would freshen a Jersey heifer, which is when you get them pregnant and then they throw a calf. So I get a new calf into my herd. I don't want to milk her, so I'd find a dairy nearby who makes money off of the milk, and I traded her two for one. So I'd get three calves out of every cow.
Okay.
And so, I built a herd pretty fast doing that.
So you built a herd, which
I was quite the entrepreneur.
Provided for college. But now, were you going to come back to the farm, or
At the time, I didn't think I ever would. You know, it wasn't until years later. So I left, went to college, ended up in Indianapolis, became, as you said, an entrepreneur. I'd started a couple of tech companies and done quite well at that, and really enjoyed it. But when I was in my late 20s, I kind of started to just get the itch that I wanted my hands dirty again. I wanted to get back to ag. But I couldn't just go buy a combine and 3,000 acres, you know?
well, and who can? You
know? Right. It's a little tough. So that's when I decided to. So I'm a self-taught programmer. It's one thing that people don't know about me in technology.
Oh, really?
Is I'm a hacker. I'm not a...
You didn't like study programming?
No. No, I studied architecture for 1 year and business for 1 year.
Really?
And then I'm actually a college quitter. So
okay, so you don't have a computer background.
No, I am a computer hacker, and I thought, well, what better way to learn the food industry than to hack it just like I did software? So I
tried to get into it somehow, right?
Exactly right. So I dove right in with a company that was silly from the start. It's called Meat the Rabbit.
M-E-A-T.
M-E-A-T, and it was a game meats distributorship. And
so were you raising rabbits? Were you having someone else raise the rabbits and you were selling them? How did that work?
Well, that business plan went through several iterations. I had other farmers raising the rabbits. I contracted to, this is when my relationship with Adam Moody at Moody's Butcher Shops began,
sure.
Who's now a dear friend of mine. And he was processing them, and then I was getting them distributed. I signed distributors here in Indianapolis and Chicago, Louisville, all the way down as far south as Nashville.
So you built this...
Built this little rabbit business.
Okay. But along the way, you were learning about local food and
exactly.
that sort of thing.
The whole purpose of that business was to learn what the food industry is like, what the regulations are like, what the supply chains and costs and all these things that don't exist in software when you don't have a physical, tangible product in any way, shape, or form.
Right. You're not knocking on doors with your box of software.
Exactly.
Just selling that. But you kind of
And you don't
are,
have to keep which... software frozen. When software gets frozen, it's actually a bad thing.
That's right.
But the rabbit needed to stay frozen, so... So I sold that, and I started a company called Husk with Chris Baggett Adam Moody.
And Adam Moody. So I think that we've been familiar with it. I've talked to various people about Husk in the past. Now tell me how that went. Now, that was frozen corn, right? I mean, that was the original.
It started with frozen corn for where the brand came from. It ended up we were across all lines. We were a local food co-packer and processor. And the goal was to get more local food into the grocery chain, into the grocery supply chain.
Right, on shelves at Kroger.
And exactly right.
Marsh, that sort of thing.
Yeah, so that consumers could have more access to it. That was our vision and our mission was to get consumers more access to local food, and we accomplished that. I'm really proud of the work we did at Husk. But at the end of the day, I learned a lot about the grocery industry there that I hadn't learned with the rabbit business because that was all food service, selling to chefs and restaurants. And
so what did you learn about the grocery business and getting local food on those shelves?
I think that the grocery business was not quite ready for the local food change. They're still trying to centralize more so than decentralize. And while they had a need to put an end kiosk up with a local banner so that they could, you know, draw people in the store, I'm not sure that the grocery industry is really ready to be completely transformed, which is what entrepreneurs like me are ready to do.
So how did that work out?
Well, we sold the company to another local farmer here, and he's doing quite well with it, as I understand, and I'm really glad for them. And we were able to then move on and start, it was at one time farmersmarket.com. It's now been rebranded Market Wagon, and it's myself and a couple of other new co-founders. It's Dan Bruner, who's a logistics and MBA background, and really under the hood, it's now marrying my passion for food, right, mm-hmm. and my tech skills, because this is really a technology and logistics company, because that's the challenge, is getting local food into the hands of consumers, and we're using the internet to do that.
We've been talking with Nick Carter, co-founder and CEO of MarketWagon.com. We'll be back with more from Nick here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Jolene Ketzenberger, and we are back here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio talking about farmers markets. But rather than traditional markets where you go and shop, we're talking today about online farmers markets, where you can shop online for local products and have them delivered to a pickup location or even right to your door. Entrepreneur Nick Carter, CEO and co-founder of MarketWagon.com, tells us how an online farmers market works and how MarketWagon got started.
It's marketwagon.com, and it is an online farmer's market in the sorts that delivers. So you can, we give the producers unlimited access to the market. They list their products. They set their own prices. They describe it. They can market their products. They can drive traffic to it. They can interact with the consumers. So customers go to our site, and they shop, and they find several different farmers producing eggs. They have a conversation with them. They can chat with them about what feed they use or how they rotate them across the pastures. And they choose the farm that they want to buy eggs from. They place an order. The eggs come straight from the farm to us. We aggregate all these orders from a 12-county area in central Indiana, and then we deliver to homes and businesses all around.
Right to their door.
Right to their door for a fee. Or there's free pickup locations. There's about 33 pickup locations in central Indiana that it's free if you're willing to go to those hubs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So now, how do you start building something like that? So when you started it, when it was farmersmarket.com, how did you start saying, okay, well, now we've got an online farmers market? but how do you start that?
Yeah, there's the tech, right? We had to have a platform, and so I and a couple of other developers that I managed, we built that, and we had the platform. But then it's and if you build it, they will come. You know, we had to get farmers to sign on to a very new idea. And so there was a lot of, we call it foraging now. It's actually a core part of our business. We're up to 92 vendors already in our market, but we're still constantly looking for more. And it was January of 2016 we launched. We only had 12 vendors.
Okay,
we had 12 vendors and 45 products, and we went live.
45 products, like what? You know, I'm thinking produce and honey and eggs and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, it was January of 2016, but we had a hydroponics farm, so we had a little bit of produce. We had eggs, honey, and one meat vendor. So we had some grass-fed beef and poultry and things like that. And
so how did that go? How did it start?
We had our first launch in Moody's Butcher Shop in Geist. So they hosted us as a free pickup location.
Pickup site, okay.
I remember the very first week we had 15 orders, and we were high fives all around the office.
Okay.
We're so excited.
So that was good. So 15 orders.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, you know, when one came in, we were ecstatic. We had no idea what the response would be. And it was overwhelming. I mean, people really loved the idea. They reacted well to it, and so did the farmers. Even though 15 orders was not enough to make them excited at all, they could see where we were headed, and they've stuck with it and grown with us. And today, tomorrow morning, we'll ship out about 150 orders.
So. Now, how does that work? What's the timing like, you know, when people order, and how does that happen?
Orders are due every week, Tuesday night at midnight. And so then what our software does is around 1 o'clock in the morning on Wednesday morning, it emails every farmer exactly what they sold and who they sold it to. So if you think about being at a farmer's market, you got to pack up your entire inventory, drive there, keep it cold.
Put it back out, right.
Sit there for 4 hours and go home. So with us, when they arrive to our facility then on Thursday morning, that stuff is all sold.
So they know they have sold it all.
They know they sold it all. It's already bought and paid for. They're just bringing it for the customers that we can then take it out that Thursday and deliver. So Tuesday is when the order cutoff is, and then Thursday afternoon we deliver to the consumers.
So they get their order, and then they harvest or gather up whatever it is they need to do.
Yeah. This is the phenomenal part. I mean, if you're talking about produce, these orders go out. The pick tickets is what we call it, which is a warehouse term for picking off of the shelf. But to the produce vendors, it literally means on Wednesday that's what they're picking out of the field.
Oh, so that's a real pick ticket.
It's fresh produce. This stuff is showing up as fresh as you can possibly imagine. Yeah.
So it has been a success, apparently.
Yeah. How
much have you grown?
Well, I mentioned our very first week we had 15 customers.
Right.
And today we're doing about 150 orders a week. We've got well over 1,000 customers that are regular. We've got we just expanded into Evansville. So we've taken the model and replicated it down in Evansville, Indiana, and we're getting ready to do so in other areas of the state. And by next year, we'll be expanding outside of Indiana.
So that's the goal then,
yeah.
Right?
I think every town should have an online farmers market that can deliver.
All right. So how does that – tell me a little bit about – the logistics of planning something like this. You know, how does an online farmers market actually work?
Well, you've got to have, you have all these vendors and they get to list all of their products. But the beauty of this is it's not a store. So if you wanted to sell eggs in our market, I don't have to make a decision about am I going to give up shelf space from somebody else that's already selling eggs? Because the pixels and the bytes don't cost us anything.
So that's the difference in trying to get something in a grocery store,
exactly.
For example. You know, that you're competing with every other producer, yep. of your jams or your eggs or whatever.
Or frozen sweet corn at
or
Husk.
Or Husk sweet corn, right?
Every meeting we had with Kroger or with Meijer or with Whole Foods meant for them to decide that they were going to carry our local Indiana sweet corn. They had to say no to another line that was in the freezer.
Right. So, and so Green Giant had to move over to make room for Husk. I mean,
you got
or
it.
Someone had to move over.
That's exactly right.
So what did you learn from that? Because I remember when we have talked in the past that that was a big stumbling block was the getting the local food into the market. So what did you learn from that and how did that influence the online stuff?
Yeah, what we learned from that was just by getting on the shelf at a grocery store, our job had just begun. We still had to market directly to the consumer. Just because it was on the shelf, it wasn't going to sell. So it was still our job at Husk in order to go out and reach consumers directly through Facebook and through email and through, you know, word-of-mouth marketing so that they would go to the stores and clear the shelves so that then the retail store would buy again. That's the name of the game. Well, if we're reaching the consumer directly, and today with the internet and with the logistics that we have through delivery and cold storage and things like that, why don't we just take them the product directly too?
So you're cutting out the grocery store step.
Yeah. Yeah, it's incredibly direct. It puts more money in the hands and or in the pockets of the farmers who are producing the food. On average, if you're wholesaling food, you're lucky to get 50 cents of the resale dollar. And all of our producers get at least 75% of the retail dollar back to them. So they're really making a lot more money at this.
So, but this is a for-profit venture, though, right? And this
absolutely.
This is growing, and it's a business, and you're expanding like any other sort of business.
Absolutely. You know, we're in this because we believe that there's a better way to serve the customer, to serve the farmers, and if you've got a better mousetrap, then you're going to make more profit.
You know, and so and that's good, then, right?
That's right. Right. I'm a capitalist for sure.
Now, what sort of things have you learned, from the very early businesses when you first got into local food with Meet the Rabbit?
Mm-hmm.
You know, have some of those things that you learned in selling directly to chefs, has that had an effect on what you're doing now?
Yeah, it's helped me to really understand that selling direct to the consumer is much more difficult than selling to chefs and restaurateurs. They're actually a lot more picky sometimes than what restaurants can be. A restaurant can choose to adapt its menu for seasonality and things like that, but the consumers are very finicky, you know.
How so?
It was a lot of rain in Indiana over the last 4 or 5 weeks, which
absolutely.
Really hurt crops like tomatoes, some of your early cucumbers.
I think I missed the strawberries completely.
We had a really short strawberry season as a result. And our consumers, we have to educate them. We have to tell them why, you know, we're an online produce market, but we don't have tomatoes. And it's because we're local and we're not going to ship it in from California. So whereas chefs really appreciate that and they can help tell the story at the table side and on the menu. And at the end of the day, they can also get tomatoes from Sysco.
Well, right, right. So if I want tomatoes and you don't have tomatoes, then I have to go somewhere else. Right,
right.
But you do have a variety. I mean, the last time I looked, I mean, it was a lot of product.
Oh, yeah. From the early days when I said we had 12 vendors and 45 products, we're now 92 vendors and reaching 1,500 products. There's a lot of options.
Like what? So, you know, of course, we think about the big ones. You know, we think about the corn and the tomatoes and the produce.
Mm-hmm.
What other sorts of local products do you have?
Nearly a dozen meat farms of all walks, and many of them have different species. When you've got beef, pork, and chicken, we've got some duck, we've got quail eggs, we've got rabbit. So Meet the Rabbit.
Right? We're still talking about Meet the Rabbit?
Meet the
yeah.
Rabbit. the farm that purchased that company from me, Don and Tanya Cruiser in Pendleton, Indiana, they're now a vendor in Market Wagon. They're doing great with that business, which is just awesome to see. As an entrepreneur, it's almost like being a parent, and you birth a child.
Right,
and,
so
and you see them grow up and move out.
Here's the little business that I raised up for a while, right?
And they're doing a great job with it, and they've really taken it far beyond what I had done with it, and they deserve a lot of credit. So we have the meats, we've got eggs, we've got cheeses, we have Trader's Point Creamery, we've got Dandy Breeze Creamery, we've got so local milk. Then there's the artisan products. We've got all kinds of sauces and seasonings and honeys and things like that. Breads. When the bread shows up on Thursday morning for delivery, the boxes are warm and the whole place smells like I just want to eat everybody's bread. it's incredibly fresh breads, and of course, like you said, the produce.
Now, you know, I think it's a different way of shopping. I think you have to get into the habit of it. You know, like I get the little email that tells me that, you know, time's running out. You got to get your order in by midnight. Have you had any challenges in getting the consumer on board with that?
It's definitely different. You know, for starters, it requires planning, which many people today don't do as much meal planning through the week. So since we deliver once a week.
Yeah, I'm not much of a planner.
I know. It's like it's Saturday and what's going to be for dinner tonight? And Market Wagon can't solve that unless you plan for it on Tuesday.
Right.
So there is that. There's also a lot of people have a fear around, you know, I want to pick up and hold that tomato before you deliver it to me.
You know, there is that. Yeah. You know, it's like, well, can you pick out a tomato as good as I can? Well, I don't know, you know. So there, that was, you know, when some of the grocery stores were experimenting with the shopper thing, you know, where they'll do your shopping for you and then deliver it to your house. Well, you know, I wondered about that, about trusting someone else to pick out my groceries.
Yeah, and that's a real concern when you're accustomed to, over the last several decades, as we are, going to the supermarket and seeing what the options are, that a good portion of the tomatoes that are set out have been damaged in transit and have been sitting in a warehouse for many days before they made it to where I can buy them.
Right.
Not so with the produce that we're selling. And so most of our consumers, if they've got a concern about that, it's alleviated in their first delivery.
So is there something you wish people understood about this whole online shopping and online farmers markets specifically? Because, you know, we've kind of embraced online shopping. You know, we have, the online shopping like mad, so many options, clothes, shoes, everything, you know, and now we have Prime delivery. We can get it in a day. So I think we like the idea of online shopping. Anything about food shopping that's specific that you wish people knew or thought about?
That's a really great question. I would say that I wish people realized that the internet doesn't have to be a community destroyer, right? And the faceless, nameless kind of transaction, that you really can build a relationship and interact directly with the producer, even though Amazon and other companies like that haven't really produced that kind of experience for us. I can't have a conversation with somebody about the size of shoes that I should get.
You know, should I size up or should I size down? So you can't do that.
We sort of read reviews and we just consume information on there, but it's very impersonal. And that doesn't have to be the case. We have direct interaction with our farmers.
With the actual producer of the product instead of, you know, like the shoemaker is not talking to me, but a farmer could, right?
Exactly.
Well, that's very cool. You know, and I think that that's not something that we expect, you know, in shopping online.
Yeah, we are almost surprised when a human being answers the phone. If you call Market Wagon, you know, you don't get it's not a 1-800 number. It's actually a 317 number. And you're surprised if you get an online chat with somebody and it's not an offshore customer support technician or something like that. It's actually, wow, this is a farmer who's probably on a tractor right now answering me on his smartphone and maybe getting a little off of his rows. I don't know.
well, that's kind of nice. You know, that's a nice feeling. Now, tell me how people can go about shopping. You know, are there, you know, is it easy? Is it, you know, complicated? That sort of thing.
Yeah, it's actually, we try to make it as simple as possible. Just go to marketwagon.com. It's all one word. And then we don't have any sign-up fees. You don't have to have an account. There's no subscriptions. It's not a long-term commitment. It's nothing like that. It's just find the products that you like and you want that week and check out. We ship it to you.
And these are all local farmers?
All local farmers. Yeah. And we define local by the kinds of farmers who are willing to come here and participate in our delivery process. So nobody ships us products and we don't get products off of a loading truck. The farmers actually arrive at our headquarters here in Indianapolis every Thursday to deliver your product for you.
We've been talking about MarketWagon.com with CEO and co-founder Nick Carter. For more information, check out MarketWagon.com. We're talking today here on Eat Drink Indie Radio about online farmers markets, about helping farmers reach more shoppers, and helping shoppers connect with farmers and other producers. Local food advocate Twinkle Van Winkle is the market master at Hoosier Harvest Market, a farmer-owned co-op based in Hancock County. Twinkle tells us about the co-op model and how that helps support local farmers and how she helps get the local food message out to the public.
Hoosier Harvest Market is an online food co-op. We are the first online food co-op food farmers market in Indiana. We're the only farmers co-op that's online in Indiana.
So you're owned by the farmers.
So we're owned by the farmers.
Okay.
It was started in 2013 by a group of community leaders, the Extension Office, and the USDA from Greenfield in Hancock County. We're still run out of the Extension Office there. It's very low-key.
Right. So what is the structure? This is a way for consumers to order from farmers and then pick up their food so that they don't have to actually physically go to a farmer's market. Is that right?
Right. I mean, you can obviously I would still love to support you to go to a farmer's market at all times. But it's also a way that you can go on and support small farmers. We're kind of do call ourselves kind of a farm incubator in a way, because we do help some people who are not able to go to farmers markets, who are too busy harvesting.
Support for the farmers who can't actually get there,
yeah.
Right?
Or someone who wants to have a bigger audience, you know. But yes, you're supporting a local farmer, you're supporting a neighbor. Your food is oftentimes picked within 6 hours of picking it up, even. I mean,
That's awesome.
Within a day to even like a few hours.
So fresh and local. What would you tell people are some of the reasons to buy local, to support something like this?
Well, I really think that when you support a farmer's market like this, or like a local farmer's market, you're really supporting the community. You're supporting your neighbor. You're getting to know your neighbors. And you're helping your own local economy, because so many of small farmers are just like a small business. And you're also putting food you know where it came from on your plate, basically. A lot of times smaller farmers, you know, the care they take for their products, whether it be produce or whether it's beef or chicken or things like that, you know, grown in small batches, oftentimes they use less chemicals. There's more ethical ways of raising and growing what you're eating.
Now, what sort of products are available through Hoosier Harvest Market?
We have fresh produce, anywhere from, like right now I just listed sweet corn.
Oh my goodness, it's that time of year.
and it'll be gone in 3 hours. Now we have like squash and zucchini, and tomatoes will be coming in, and we have microgreens, and we also have ethically raised beef and chicken and eggs from several different people.
Now, can you find out the farms that your produce is coming from or your products are coming from
the website? Yes, you can see who our producers are, and it should link you to their websites. It's all there online for you.
Well, now, talk a little bit more about the concept of an online farmer's market, you know, and how it works and how people have get their food.
Okay. Well, it's really very easy. There, a lot of times people think because we're a co-op that you might have to pay to shop. But
like you don't have to join.
You
right?
do not have to join. The members are the farmers.
Right.
So anyway, what you do is you just go online, just like you would order, you know.
Like if I was shopping on Amazon.
Like you were
right?
shopping on Amazon. You go into the marketplace, all of the products are listed. You can sort by what you're looking for, whether you want honey or we have coffee beans for a local roaster, like any of those kinds of things. You select your orders, you put them in your basket, you check out, and you will select where you want to pick that up. So on Wednesday at noon, our market closes.
Okay.
All of the orders go to the farmers. And then on Thursday, our delivery driver picks up all the fresh stuff. We get it ready for you in our refrigerated bags, and then later that afternoon on Thursday, you'll go pick it up.
So there are drop-off points, right?
There are drop-off spots all around Marion County, and we're expanding on that list now. because we have more people in Indianapolis that want to order from us. So we're trying to make it as convenient as possible.
Oh, sure.
Maybe one day we'll be able to deliver. But really, from you picking it up, it really helps us to grow the business a little bit more, you know, kind of like Aldi and taking your own bags.
Right.
It's kind of that concept. So.
But it is all packed for you. Your order is all packed in your bag.
It's all packed with ice packs and everything else if it needs to be refrigerated.
Are there minimum order amounts or certain sizes of orders that you
There's
can get?
There's not a minimum order, so you don't have to buy $20 of something to get something.
So you could check
it
out with a few things at first.
Yeah, yeah. Know? We actually have a promotion going on right now that if you're a new customer until the end of August, you get $5 off your first order of $25.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a good little promotion there.
Talk a little bit about how it helps the farmers, you know, and the co-op mm-hmm. model.
The co-op model is an old model where I think most people are familiar with it, but in the sense where, you know, you go to a farm and you buy a CSA, which
mm-hmm.
you can do. We do offer a CSA, but it's not, you don't have to just order a CSA. You can order what you want. But what that co-op model does is those farmers are the owners of that business. Any orders that you purchase that make profit go back to support those farmers. So essentially, you know, I mean, we're a not-for-profit business that farmers own. They're putting their products up there with a very small markup, basically to cover the cost of delivering the food, really. And so they're making that money.
We've been talking with Twinkle Van Winkle, Market Master with Hoosier Harvest Market. For more information, go to HoosierHarvestMarket.com. I'm Jolene Ketzenberger, and you've been listening to Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI HD2, The Point. Thank you so much for tuning into our Farmers Market Focus show today, and thanks also to our guests. Stevie Stace Kirsch, Executive Director of the Indianapolis City Market. Nick Carter, Co-Founder and CEO of MarketWagon.com. And Twinkle Van Winkle, Market Master with Hoosier Harvest Market. And thanks also to producer John Ketzenberger for helping to bring you Eat, Drink, Indie Radio. Eat, Drink, Indie Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndie.com. Eat local, drink local, eat, drink, indie.